FM. Last week we saw the release of Triple J's Hottest 100 of Australian songs, with some iconic songs taking out the top spots. But what makes a song sound Aussie? Here to explain is Catherine Strong, Associate Professor in Music Industry at RMIT University. Thank you for joining us this morning, Catherine. How are you?
Great, thanks. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with naming some Australian artists that have that Aussie sound.
I think that the idea of an Aussie sound is really, really hard to pin down. A lot of people have connected it back to sort of a pub rock sound that developed in the 1970s and into the 80s, which I think we did see a lot of representation of in the countdown, particularly in the top 20, where we saw bands like Cold Chisel. We saw, who was the band that was right near the top? INXS. There was a few INXSs. Those sorts of bands got a lot of representation, and I think for a lot of people that is the sound of Australian music. But of course, Australian music is much, much, much more complicated than that, and there are a lot of different sounds out there that other people think are just as Australian.
So these and many other Australian artists make up what you would call the Oz canon. So what exactly is that, and what patterns of artists are in that group?
So a canon is a group of songs that there has been sort of a general agreement that these are the best representations of this type of music. And this is a concept that comes from classical music, where in classical music there is like quite a strong agreement that composers like Beethoven are the people who represent the best of that type of music. This has been something that's developed over time with popular styles of music. And we have a very well-developed sort of overarching rock canon that spans like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And then we can see that there's this Australian version of it as well, where we've got, you know, Cold Chisel and John Farnham and Paul Kelly and INXS. The thing about canons, though, is that they're always a bit contested and that often they do reflect something about power relations in society. So it's been pointed out that the overarching rock canon is just pretty much white men. And you can see that that is reflected again in a lot of the rock canon that we see in Australia. So it's really important that we've seen in this Hottest 100 that the Veronicas were really high in the chart, and they are a women pop duo, which is something that is the complete opposite of the rock canon. So getting those other voices in there as well is really important and great to see.
And what role did the Whitlam government have in funding this Aussie sound in the 70s?
So the Whitlam government, when they were elected, one of the things that they said really strongly was that they thought that culture was very important, and that they thought it was possible to use culture and even popular culture, which was something that had been a little bit ignored or looked down upon previously. They saw it as something that could be used to build an idea of a national identity and an idea of what it is to be Australian. And one of the things they were doing there was that they were pushing back against the cultural cringe. So the idea that Australian culture was somehow only an imitation, or it wasn't as good as things that came from overseas. And that attitude of not seeing Australian culture as being very good had led to like decades and decades of anyone who was a good artist in any sort of area, like painting or music or sculpture or making films, they would go overseas because it was seen as the right thing to do to actually create a career. Whitlam was like, no, we want these people to stay here. We want them to tell stories and to make music and art that reflects something about what it is to exist on this continent. And so they put a lot of money into doing things like setting up new radio stations where people could have their stuff played. They also sponsored film and television initiatives that saw an Australian voice being brought into those areas as well. So they were really important in trying to encourage people in this country to think of what we do as being unique and important.
And what about Indigenous Australian artists' sounds and instruments? Are they included in this Aussie sound?
I think not as much as they should be at all. So we only saw two Indigenous acts making it into the Hottest 100, and that was Treaty that came in at number 36 and Thelma Plum's song Better in Black, which was at 53. And I think that there are at this point so many iconic Indigenous acts, Wurrumpi Band, Archie Roach, AB Original, Briggs, his work. And to not see some of those also in there was, I thought, pretty disappointing. But that also, again, comes back to this question of, like, how canons and these sorts of polls often will reflect sort of power relations in society, and Indigenous people have been not given as much space to tell their stories and to be part of the artistic sort of community in this country, and still something that has a long way to go.
I have just one more question before I let you go, Catherine. Did you vote for anyone particular in the Hottest 100, or were you more of a passive observer of the outcome?
I didn't get my votes in on time. I was thinking so hard about it for so long, and I was slowly putting together a list, and I didn't get there in time, which is embarrassing to have to admit. But I was really stuck on this thing, which I think a lot of people probably struggled with, this question of, do I vote for the songs that I actually really think are the best songs, or do I vote for the songs that I think are likely to get into the chart? So which way do I put my votes? Like, what's the more important thing to do? And in the end, I got so caught up in that that it just stopped me from getting there at all.
All right. I think I'll give you the chance to give your cast your vote now. What was on your list, Catherine? What was on your list?
I had some stuff like The Mark of Cain, which I really loved when I was a teenager and in my early 20s, who I don't think anyone has really sort of mentioned at all. So, like, a little bit, I guess, obscure. Definitely The Divinals. I would have loved to have seen more Divinals, more of their earlier stuff in there. Magic Dirt is another band that it would have been good to see. And I'm trying to remember who else now. And, oh, look, I think Radio Birdman's Aloha, Stephen Dano. That was another one that I was quite surprised didn't get in there. It was such a catchy tune. So great.
There you go. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us this morning, having a chat about the Aussie canon and perhaps its future and in Australian music culture.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Catherine Strong, Associate Professor in Music Industry at RMIT University, discussing the Oz canon, what it sounds like, and who gets to be a part of it. You're listening to the Thursday Daily here on 2SER 107.3. And this is Safe for Another Day by Shirley Shirley from the album of the same name, Safe for Another Day. We'll play this before we head into the news. Stick around, plenty more to come on the show. Wayne coming up at 10:15 this morning, back from his little holiday. Back with you shortly. This is 2SER 107.3.